We can try again tomorrow. Okay, Hal said. She felt something shift inside her at the thought of returning to the cold house and Mrs. Warren's waiting figure rocking by her fireside, mistress once again of all she surveyed. It was not an inviting prospect, but what was the alternative? A B&B? She had no money for a room and she could not very well ask Ezra to pay. Okay, she said again, trying to make herself sound and feel more positive. Back to Trepassin it is, then.
It's not likely to be a very warm welcome,
Ezra said as he turned the key in the ignition and the engine roared out into the quiet.
But at least we won't freeze.
Chapter 44. Returning to Trepassin felt strange. Like putting on the heavy pack that you downed a few hours earlier, the blisters from the strap still raw. Or sliding your feet back into wet shoes that were once soggily clammy and had become, in the interim, downright unpleasant. The gates onto the road were still ajar, but as they turned up the drive, Hal saw that the long stretch of whiteness was unmarked. No car had passed this way for many hours. Either Abel and Harding had thought better of leaving, or they had left soon after Hal and Ezra and had not returned.
"There's no lights on," Ezra said beneath his breath as they wound round the last bend of the drive.
The white marker rocks were hard to see, except in the places beneath the trees where the canopy had protected the road from the snowfall, and he had to slow to a crawl to ensure he didn't slide off the path.
"Mrs. Warren must be in bed."
Good, was all Hal could think, though she did not say it. They parked in front of the porch. Ezra turned off the engine, and they both sat for a moment. Hal had an image of two athletes before a fight, strapping up knuckles, snapping mouthguards into place. Except it was not Ezra she was fighting.
"Ready?"
he said, with a short laugh. Hal didn't smile in return. She only nodded, and they stepped out into the falling snow. The door was locked, but Ezra lifted one of the flat stones that formed the sheltering seat of the porch, and beneath it Hal saw a huge blackened key, a thing from another era, at least 6 inches long. He fitted it into the lock, turned it cautiously, and they stepped inside into the dark, breathing house.
"Mrs. Warren,"
Ezra called softly, and then, when there was no answer, a little more loudly,
"Mrs. Warren, it's just me, Ezra."
"Do you think Harding and Abel have gone?"
Hal whispered. Ezra nodded.
"Harding texted while you were asleep. They made it across Bodmin Moor before the road closed and holed up at a travel lodge near Exeter."
"I'm so sorry," Hal said. She felt a stab of guilt. "It's my fault. If you hadn't gone via Penzance..."
"No use crying over spilt milk,"
Ezra said shortly, but the suppressed rage Hal had seen earlier seemed to have vanished, and there was only resignation in his tone.
"Look, Hal, it's very late, and I don't know about you, but I'm shattered. Are you okay for me to head up?"
"Of course," Hal said. "I'll go to bed too."
There was a short, awkward silence, and then Ezra pulled her into a clumsy hug, almost too hard, that scraped her face on his jacket and left her bones bruised.
"Good night, Hal. And tomorrow..."
He stopped. "Tomorrow?" Hal echoed.
"Let's just get going as early as possible, okay?"
"Okay," she agreed. They climbed the first flight of stairs together, and then at the landing, they went their separate ways.
When Hal opened the door to the attic chamber,
The little room was just as she had left it. Curtains pulled back so that the pale snowy light streamed through the barred windows. Covers thrown back, even down to the blown bulb on the landing. There were a few pieces of coal left in the scuttle, and with the comforting knowledge that she would not be around for very long in the morning to face Mrs. Warren's censure, Hal screwed up a page of newspaper, placed the coals in the grate, and put a match to the fire. As it flared up, she sat hunched in front of it, thinking about her mother crouching here so long ago, tearing the pages from her diary and everything she had learned since finding it. Edward. Could it really be true? It must be. But when she thought of him, of his smooth blonde hair, carefully coiffed moustache, she felt nothing. No sense of connection, just a faint loathing for the man who had impregnated her mother and then left her, ignored her letters, leaving her to the mercy of a woman like Mrs. Westaway. Part of her wanted to push the knowledge aside and move on into the future, as Ezra had suggested. But the question still niggled. Why had Abel lied so transparently? Had he banked on her not asking the same questions of Ezra? If only her mother hadn't scrubbed all the mentions of Hal's father from her diary. Hal sat, staring into the flames, too tired to rouse herself sufficiently to go to bed. She was almost beyond thought now, and she had the strangest feeling that history had looped around, putting her here, in her mother's place, where Maggie herself had crouched so long ago, watching the flames burn the name of her lover to ashes, so that she, Hal, could discover a truth that had been buried long ago. But what was that truth? Not just the name of her father. There had been something else. Something Ezra had said that was bothering her. And now she could not pinpoint what it was. Was it during their conversation in the service station? She cast her mind back, running through everything he had said, but whatever it was, it kept slipping through her fingertips, a truth too insubstantial to catch hold of. At last she stood, stretching her stiff limbs, the air of the room cool on her cheeks after the heat of the fire. Her case lay at the foot of the bed. In the pocket was the old tobacco tin, and she opened it and drew out her cards. Shivering a little, she cut the deck. The card that stared up at her was the moon, inverted. Hal frowned. The moon meant intuition and trusting your intuition. It was a guiding light, but one that could be unreliable, for it was not always there, and sometimes when you needed it most, the night would be impenetrably dark. Inverted, it meant deception, and especially self-deception. It meant the intuition that could lead you astray, down a false path. Don't fall into the trap of believing your own lies. Her mother's voice in her ear, warning, always warning. You want to believe as much as they do. And she did. She did want to believe. After her mother's death, she had found herself dealing out the cards night after night, trying to make sense of it all, trying to find answers where there were none. She had spent hours poring over her mother's cards, running her hands over them, looking for meaning. But always that voice of skepticism in her ear, her mother's voice. There is no meaning apart from what you want to see and what you are afraid of turning up. She put her hands over her ears, as if she could shut out that voice of whispered sense and logic.
When had her mother become so cynical? The girl in the diary, with her superstition and her obsessive reading of the cards, she was like a different person from the woman who had taken herself to the pier every day to read for fools and strangers. Tarot had been a job for Hal's mother, nothing more. It had been something she was good at, but she had never believed, however convincing her patter was to strangers, and she had never hidden that skepticism from Hal. How had she turned from this questing, open-hearted young girl into the disillusioned, weary woman Hal remembered? "They're not magic, sweetheart," she had said to Hal once. Hal could not have been more than 4 or 5. "You can play with them all you like. They're just pretty pictures. But people like to pretend that life has meaning, I suppose. It makes them feel happy to think that they're part of a bigger story." "Then why," Hal had asked, confused, "did people come to see her every day? Why did they pay money if none of it was true?" "It's like going to see a play," she had explained. "People want to believe it's true. My job is to pretend it is." The girl in the diary had not been pretending. She had been in love with the power of the cards and the power of fate. She had believed. What had changed that? What had happened to make her stop believing in that power? "There is something I'm not seeing," Hal thought. And she picked up the moon card and stared at it, at the shadowy face in the bright orb. "Something I'm missing." But whatever it was, it lay just out of reach. And at last she put the cards away and slid between the sheets, fully clothed, to try to sleep. She was almost asleep, drifting in the strange no-man's land between waking and dreaming, the firelight making patterns on the inside of her lids, when an image came to her. A book. A buttercup yellow book with no lettering on the cover or spine. It wasn't hers, and she could not place where it had come from, and yet it was somehow familiar. She had seen it before, but where? Hal sat up, feeling the chill air of the room at the back of her neck, and she pressed her fingers to her closed lids, trying to picture it, where she had seen it, why her subconscious was needling her now. She had almost given up and was about to lie back and put it down to a tired imagination when something came back to her in a sudden rush. Not a picture, but a smell. The smell of dust, of cobwebs, of fraying leather. The feeling of thick, sticky plastic between her fingers. And she knew. It had been that first morning at Trepassen. The study, frozen in time, and the book on the high shelf that she had started to look through only to be interrupted. The photographs. Perhaps they would show her something she was missing. Edward, maybe, as he had been as a young man, or even her mother. And more than the photographs, the footstep in the dust. Someone, that very first morning at Trepassen, or perhaps a week before, had been in that study to look at the pictures. It might have been nostalgia, but Hal thought that of all the people she had ever met, the Westaways had not a bone of nostalgia in their bodies. The past for them was not a happy place full of golden memories, but a minefield charged with pain. No. If Abel, Ezra, Harding, Edward, or any of the others had got down that album, it had been for some other very practical reason. And suddenly,
Hal wanted to know that reason very much.
There was something in that album that someone had wanted to see, or check, or remove. But why? And if she and Ezra left first thing tomorrow, she might never have another chance to find out. Swinging her legs out of bed, Hal pulled her coat back on as some protection from the chilly night air and shoved her bare feet back into her cold shoes. Then she pushed open the attic door and tiptoed quietly down the stairs. At the first landing, she paused, listening, but no sound of snores reached her ears. If Ezra was asleep, and he must be, for he had looked exhausted enough to fall asleep on his feet, he was a silent sleeper. And then she was down in the hallway, in the dark. Hal did not dare to turn on a light, but the house was no longer the unfamiliar maze of that first morning, and she did not need one. The faint light coming in through the hall windows was enough for her to pick her way past the drawing room, past the library and the billiard room and the boot store. She pushed through a dividing door, and there, on her left, was the breakfast room, the dirty dishes still laid out on the table. The sight made Hal stop in her tracks. Had Mrs. Warren done anything since they left? But she could not stop now to wonder about that. The next part was the most dangerous, for it took her right past Mrs. Warren's sitting room, and Hal had no idea where she slept, if she slept. Somehow she would not have put it past her to be still awake at midnight, rocking in her chair in front of the hissing fire. The stone floor of the orangery was cold and too noisy to risk. However, there was no way round it. It was the only route to the study, or the only one Hal knew, at least. In the end, she bent and took off her shoes, tiptoeing across the frosty flags, wincing at the chill striking up into her bare soles. And then she was through, in the little vestibule on the far side, and her hand was on the study door. When she entered the study, Hal had, for the second time, the strangest sense of having stepped back in time. The dust of years was soft beneath her feet as she stepped across the fraying carpet, the only resistance the minute crunch of small insects or gusted leaves crushed beneath her toes. The room was shrouded in darkness, and Hal had no choice but to fumble for the switch of the green-shaded desk lamp. It was very old, the cord fraying and fabric-covered, pre-war at the least, she thought. But when she found the brass switch and clicked it, it came on without protest, illuminating the room in a soft, verdant glow. There were the steps, untouched since her last visit, the footprint upon them clearly visible. And there, at the top, was the book she had hurriedly replaced, still sticking at a very slight angle into the room. Her heart beating in her mouth, Hal set her foot onto the library steps, in the footprint of that other person, and stepped up, up, and up once again, until her hand closed on the soft yellow spine, and she slid the book out into her waiting arm. Back down at the desk, Hal sat in the wing-backed chair and angled the desk lamp towards the book. Then, with a sense almost of trepidation, she opened the softly creaking spine. The pictures were just as clear and old-fashioned as she remembered. Harding as a baby, chubby-necked in his scratchy-looking sweater. Harding riding on the shiny tricycle, and then, a few pages later, Abel's first appearance. A.L. 3 months. But this time the caption rang a bell. Al. Why was that? Hal was racking her brains when it came to her suddenly,
the entry in her mother's diary, Maud calling her brother Al. Hal had not thought of it at the time, but now it made sense.
She flicked forward through the album, faster now, through pictures of Abel toddling on the beach, playing with a ball, through a holiday in France, or perhaps Italy, Harding and Abel sitting serious-faced on the steps of some European church, ice creams in their fists, through a family Christmas, and then two little babies, swaddled side by side. Margarita Miriam, L, and Ezra Daniel, 2 days old. They were asleep, eyes tight closed, and with their eyes shut, she would not have been able to tell which was which without the caption. How strange that two twins who had looked so similar in babyhood had grown up so unlike each other. Their faces were peaceful, turned to each other as they must have turned in their mother's womb, no hint of the strife and pain that was to come. Maud. Hal let her gaze rest on the tranquil little face, cherubic in repose. Where are you, Maud? Dead? Running? Hiding? But how could she do that? How could she leave her brothers, her twin, in pain for so many years? She turned the page to see Maud as a fat-legged toddler pushing a battered wooden dog across a hearthrug, and beside her Ezra playing with a huge bear almost larger than himself. The next few pages were just of Ezra, age 4, on a brand new bicycle, shining in the sun, age 5, grinning a gap-toothed smile. Hal shook her head, remembering Abel's bitter remark about Ezra being his mother's favourite. She was about to turn the page in search of another picture of Maud, but suddenly it was too painful to carry on, watching this little girl growing towards whatever oblivion had snatched her up. And Hal sighed and closed the album, pressing her fingers into her eyes, pushing back the ache in her head and her heart. Whatever answers she was looking for, she had been foolish to think they would be here. She should put it back where it came from, go to bed, to sleep, and follow Ezra's advice to forget the past. Give up this stupid obsession with finding out what had happened so many years ago. But who had got the album down that first morning? One of the brothers? Edward? He had barely arrived, but he might have just had time. The only other option was Mrs. Warren, and that was stranger still. One thing was for sure, the truth about her mother did not lie within these pages. Unless... She stopped, the thought snagging at her, and then opened her eyes, her blurred vision refocusing painfully on the buttercup yellow cover in front of her. Once again, she picked it up and leafed slowly forward through the pages, her stomach clenched with uncertainty, unsure of what she was about to see. The confirmation came slowly, not from a single picture, but shimmering into focus, like a Polaroid photo developing in the light, features appearing from an unformed blur. First, there was a round, childish face, sharpening into features that were painfully familiar. Baby blue eyes deepening and darkening into black ones. Limbs lengthening, skin tanning, an expression that changed slowly from open-hearted trust to wariness. And then, at last, the final photograph in the book.
The twins' 11th birthday.
There she was, staring out of the page through a dark, tangled fringe, her dark eyes alight with the bright reflection of the candles, so like her brother. Hal wondered how she had ever managed to miss it. Margarita. Maud. Hal's mother. Chapter 45. If Hal had not already been sitting down, she would have had to grope for a chair. Her mother was Maud. Maud. There was no other explanation. The girl in those photographs, Ezra's twin, growing up alongside him at Trepassen, was Hal's mother. It was unmistakable. And yet, it made no sense. It had to be true. The pictures in the book did not lie. There was her mother's face, shimmering into focus in front of her very eyes, page after page, from babyhood through to first school days, into her almost teenage self, all the time growing towards the woman Hal knew painfully well. Her mother was not Maggie. Which meant... It meant that Hester Westaway was her grandmother. It meant that the will was valid. But what about the birth certificate? What about the diary? What about... And then Hal realized. And it was like the moon coming out from behind a cloud. All those shapes which had been formless black confusion in the clouded darkness were illuminated, falling into their rightful place in a landscape that suddenly made sense. She could not be sure. But if she was right, if she was right, she had been looking at this upside down the whole time. If she was right, nothing was as she had thought it was. If she was right, she had made a terrible... terrible mistake. The snow outside was still falling, and Hal pulled her coat closer around her as she turned the pages. But it was not only the cold that made her shiver this time. It was a sense of foreboding suddenly gathering around her, of the weight of the secrets of the past and the dam that she was about to break. The deluge. This time, as she leafed through the fading pictures with their yellowed coverings, this time there was no sense of wonder or nostalgia. This time, she felt as if she were plunging down a rabbit hole into the past. Because the child in the photographs, laughing and playing with her twin brother in the grounds of Trepassen, was not Hal's aunt. It was her mother. Her dark eyes unmistakably like Hal's own, but not Hal's own. Which meant Maggie, the girl who had come to Trepassen, who had written that diary, who had got pregnant, who had run away and disappeared, was a stranger. Yet Hal was Maggie's daughter. There was no other explanation. However Hal worked the maths in her head, the result was the same. Maud could not have been pregnant at the time of Hal's birth, and Maggie was. There was only one possibility, and it had been staring her in the face ever since she opened Mr. Trezick's letter, but she had been too blind to see it. Hal's mother, the woman who had loved her and brought her up and cared for her, was not the woman who had given birth to her. But what had happened? How had it happened? Hal put her hands to her head. She felt as if she were carrying a load, immensely heavy and immensely fragile and dangerous.
She had the sense of herself tiptoeing along a narrow tightrope, and in her arms a bomb, ticking gently and about to go off at any moment. Because if this meant what she thought it did, but she was getting ahead of herself. Don't rush, her mother's voice in her head. Build your story. Lay it out, card by card. Card by card, then.
So, what did Hal know for sure? She knew that Maggie had escaped. That much was clear from the diary and from Maud's letters. Maud had helped her get away sometime in January or February, and the two of them had come to Brighton to make a life together. There, in the peace and quiet of the little flat, Maggie had given birth to her baby daughter, and Maud could not have gone home. Lizzie had made that clear. She had never seen her family again from the moment she walked out. So she must have stayed with her cousin, taking care of her, biding her time, hugging her acceptance letter from Oxford, and waiting for autumn when she would take up her place at last. But then, for whatever reason, Maggie had gone back to Trepasson. Something had drawn her back. And whatever it was, it must have been a good reason for her to return to the place she had tried so hard to escape from. She had packed her bags, left her baby with her cousin, and taken the train down to Trepasson alone with a Joan of Arc look upon her face, like a maid going into battle, as Lizzie had said. Was it money that had driven her back? The realization that, try as they might, two young women not yet out of school could barely afford to feed and clothe themselves, let alone a baby. "I have a little money left from my parents," she had told Maud in her letter. But that little money would not have lasted long, even supplemented with earnings from the pier, not with Maud soon off to university and no child care for Hal. Perhaps she had gone to fight for support for her child. Whatever it was, it had gone terribly wrong. Maggie, not Maud, had disappeared. She had left Hal motherless and left Maud to pick up the pieces of her life, her flat, her little booth on the pier, and her child. In one respect, it must have been easy, with Margarita Westaway on the birth certificate and on the flat lease, and on the sign above the door at the pier. Her mother was Margarita Westaway. She had the passport and birth certificate to prove it. There was no dispute there. Maud had simply slipped into her cousin's life. But Hal's heart ached at the thought of how hard it must have been, too. Maud had given everything up. That freedom she had fought so hard for. Her college place, her hard-won future. She had given it all up. For Hal, she had picked up her cousin's child, and she had taken over the booth on the pier for one reason and one reason only. To put food on the table, because she had no other option. No wonder the open, questing girl in the diary had read like a different person to the cynical, sceptical woman who had raised Hal. They were different women. It was not that Maggie had changed her mind, it was that Maud had never done so. What was it Maggie had said, quoting Maud? Load of wafty BS, that was it. It had struck a chord with Hal, and she had laughed and connected with the remark in a way that she had not quite understood. But now she did. Now she understood why Maud had shone so clearly out of the pages. That connection she had felt, reaching back through the years. It was because they were connected. Maud was not just her aunt. She was the only mother Hal had ever known. The person she had loved beyond her own life, beyond reason, beyond bearing when she had lost her.
Urgent questions beat inside Hal's heart. How? Why? But she had to take this step by step, with the slow, measured pace of a reading. She had to turn each card as it came, consider it, find its place in the story. And the next card. The next card was one that made Hal feel terribly uneasy, in a way that she couldn't completely pin down. For the next card was not a card at all. It was a photograph. The photograph. The one that Abel had given her that first day at Trepassen. Hal pulled the golden Virginia tin out of her pocket and prized it open. The photograph was there on top, folded in half, and she unfolded it, staring at the picture with fresh eyes. There was Maud, staring out at the camera with that defiant gaze. But there, too, was Maggie. Maggie, who had written the diary. And she wasn't looking at the camera. She was looking at Ezra with her blue eyes. Blue eyes met dark. She had had it the wrong way round all this time. Hal had not inherited her dark eyes from her mother, for her mother was blonde. She had inherited them from her father, the man who had set up the camera on its tripod, started the timer, and returned to take his place in the photo. Ezra Daniel Ed. Ezra was her father. Chapter 46. Hal's phone was upstairs, in the attic, and she wore no watch, but she was sure from the stillness of the house that it must be gone midnight. Probably long gone. But there was no way she could go back to bed with this weight of truth heavy inside her, and the questions churning and churning. There was only one person she could go to, one person who might tell her truth. Mrs. Warren. And she had to go now, before Ezra woke up. If she left it until dawn. Hal picked up the album, pushed back the chair and stood, trying to summon her courage, remembering the thread across the stairs, the hissed invective in Mrs. Warren's voice. Get out, if you know what's good for you. Like Joan of Arc, her mother had been. Like a maid going into battle. Well, she had not inherited much from Maggie. Not her features, not her eyes or her hair, not even her sense of humour and scepticism. But perhaps she had inherited her mother's courage. Hal took a deep breath, steadying herself, trying to quieten the questions clamouring inside her. And then she opened the study door and stepped softly through the orangery to knock at the door of Mrs. Warren's sitting room. There was no answer. And Hal knocked a little harder, and as she did, the door swung inwards, unlatched, and she saw that the gas fire in the little sitting room was on, and the lamp on the table was burning. Had Mrs. Warren fallen asleep in her chair? It was pushed in front of the fire close up, a blanket slung over the back of it, making a dark shape that could have been a hunched old lady. But when Hal went cautiously forward, her free hand outstretched in the flickering darkness, it only rocked away and then back, unmoored, and she saw that it was empty, except for a couple of cushions. Mrs. Warren, Hal called quietly. She tried not to let her voice shake, but there was something very eerie about the silence, broken only by the low rise and fall of a radio and the creak of the rocking chair upon the boards. After the study, the sitting room was stiflingly overheated, and Hal wiped her brow, feeling sweat prickle across the back of her neck. The sound of the radio was coming from behind a door at the back of the sitting room, and Hal took a cautious step towards it, but as she did so, she nudged a little side table covered with pictures, and they fell, half a dozen of them. Shit! She grabbed for it, steadying the table before it could topple, but the pictures were like dominoes, clattering down in sequence, and Hal stood frozen for a moment, her heart in her mouth, feeling its panicked thumping. "Mrs. Warren," she managed, her voice shaking. "I'm sorry, it's only me, Hal." But no one came, and with trembling hands she began to write the pictures, one after the other. As she did, she saw, with a growing sense of disquiet, what they were. Ezra. All of them. Ezra, as a baby, in Mrs. Warren's arms, his soft hand reaching out for her cheek. Ezra, as a toddler, running across the lawn. Ezra, as a young man, almost unbearably handsome, his smile flashing out, unguarded and full of wry mischief. Ezra, Ezra, Ezra. A shrine, almost, to a lost little boy. There was one of the three brothers together on the mantelpiece. None of Maggie, though that perhaps was not surprising. Not a single one of Maud, and none, save for that one picture with Ezra in her arms, of Mrs. Warren herself. It was as if all the love in that twisted old heart, all the caring and gentleness, had settled on a single person, concentrated into a beam of adoration so ferocious that Hal felt it could have burned the skin. "Mrs. Warren," she said again, a lump in her throat now, though whether it was pity or fear she could not have said. "Mrs. Warren, wake up. Please, I need to speak to you." But nothing. Silence. Hal's hands were shaking as she crept, inch by inch, across the firelit room, towards the door at the back, holding the yellow album out in front of her now, like a shield. She imagined pushing it open, the hunched figure standing back, in silence and darkness, just as she had that night outside the attic, waiting, watching. "Mrs. Warren!" There was a note of pleading in her voice now, almost a sob. "Please! Wake up!" She was at the door now. Nothing. No sound. No movement. Her hand was on the panel. And then she pushed, and the door swung open, showing a narrow bedroom with a single iron cot bedstead, a flowered flannel nightgown folded neatly at the foot. Beneath the bed were two carpet slippers side by side, and a coat was hanging on a peg next to the door. Of Mrs. Warren herself, there was no sign at all. Hal felt her heart steady in her chest, relief flooding her momentarily. But then another kind of uneasiness took hold. If Mrs. Warren was not asleep, or in her sitting room. Where was she? "Mrs. Warren!" she shouted, making herself jump with the shock of the noise above the quiet hiss of the gas. "Mrs. Warren, where are you?" Then, at the back of the bedroom, Hal saw another door, and it was standing ajar. "Mrs. Warren?" She stepped into the bedroom, her sense of intrusion growing at the feeling that, with every step, she was venturing further and further into Mrs. Warren's private sanctum. Part of her quaked at the thought of her fury if she'd discovered Hal here, but part of her was driven on by a kind of fascination. Taking in the cross on the wall above the austere bedstead, the photograph of Ezra on the nightstand, and the small, pathetically small flannel nightgown folded across the foot of the bed. She wanted to turn back, but it was impossible now. It was more than a sick curiosity to know what was behind Mrs. Warren's formidable facade. It was a desire, no, a need for answers. Answers only Mrs. Warren could give. Her hand was outstretched. She was almost at the door.
Hal?
A voice came from behind her, making her jump convulsively and swing round, eyes wide in the darkness.
Who's there?
No sign of anyone at first. And then something moved. A dark shape in the doorway. And he stepped forward into the little room. The snow had stopped, she realized with a sense of detached wonderment. And the moon had come out, sending a thin white light slanting across the bare boards between them.
How? What are you doing?
There was no censure in his deep voice, just a kind of concerned curiosity.
Ezra, she stammered. I was looking for Mrs. Warren.
It was true, after all.
Why? Is something wrong?
I'm fine, she managed. But it was not true. Her heart was beating so hard and fast it made a hissing in her ears, a roar she could barely silence enough to hear her own thoughts. He stepped forward into the moonlight, one hand stretched out as if to take hers, to lead her back into safety.
Hal, are you sure you're all right? You look very strange. And what's that you've got there? Is it a book?
She looked down at her hands, where she was still holding the yellow album, and then up at Ezra, at her father. She met his eyes, and it was like falling into dark, leaf-strewn water, like falling into her own past. Because suddenly, in a single crystallizing instant, she understood. Once, at school, Hal's teacher had had them conduct an experiment where they cooled a bottle of water to below freezing and then tapped it sharply on a table. When they did, the water froze all in an instant, the ice spreading with impossible swiftness like some kind of magic spell. As she stood there, gazing into Ezra's dark, liquid eyes, Hal felt as if the same process were taking place inside her. A painful chill spreading out from her core, turning the blood in her veins to ice, and her limbs stiff and frozen. Because she understood, finally, and without needing to know, what had happened to Mrs. Warren. She understood Mrs. Warren's odd expression that first day, Mrs. Westaway's will and her strange, cryptic message to Harding. She understood the wording of the bequest and the mistake that had occurred, not Mr. Tresick's fault at all. How could she have ever thought that dry, careful little man would make such a catastrophic error? She understood why Abel had denied Edward's presence at the lake that day, and why Ezra had refused to challenge the will or pursue the deed of variation. And that odd throwaway that had niggled and niggled and niggled at her subconscious. And most of all, she understood why her mother had cut herself off from her past, and Hal with her.
Get out, if you know what's good for you.
Not a threat, but a warning. And she had understood it too late. Chapter 47. Time seemed to slow as they stood, staring at each other. Hal's throat was dry, and her voice croaked when she finally spoke. It's an album, but maybe you knew that. She tried to say the words lightly, but they sounded strange in her own mouth, and she realized she was hugging herself defensively, as though to protect herself from some unknown attacker.
Think about how you hold yourself, Hal. It's not just what we read in others, it's what they read in us.
Her face was stiff, and she forced a smile, widening the corners of her mouth in what felt like a death mask grimace.
Well, I'm very tired.
Ezra took the album from her hand, but he didn't move to leave. Instead, he put his hand on the wall, leaning casually, blocking Hal's route to the exit, and he cocked his head and smiled at her as he leafed through the pages.
Oh, this old thing. Gosh, I had no idea Mother had kept hold of so many pictures.
Hal said nothing, only watched as he turned the pages.
How did you stumble across this old thing?
Hal swallowed hard. She forced her arms to drop to her sides, making her body language open, trying to look relaxed. I couldn't sleep. I was looking for a book to read. I went to the study.
I see. And did you look at the photographs, by the way?
His voice was casual, careless even. But as he said the words, Hal knew. He knew. She had seen something in him, some change in the way he held himself, some imperceptible difference in his stance. She had seen that flicker of recognition when she hit a nerve too often in her booth to be mistaken. She saw it now.
Just the first ones,
Hal said. She made her breathing slow, steady, listened detachedly to the tremor in her own voice, trying to quieten it, make her voice calm, soothing. Why?
No reason,
he said. But there was no pretense now. He was not smiling any longer, and Hal felt her heart quicken.
Get out while you still can.
Well, I think I'll go back to bed now, if you don't mind. She said the words slowly and carefully, keeping very calm, waiting for him to move aside. But he only shook his head.
I don't think so. I think you did look at that album.
There was a long, long silence. Hal felt her heart beating inside her. And then it was like something inside her broke open and the words came tumbling out, full of bitterness.
Why didn't you tell me? You knew. You knew. You were Ed. Why did you pretend it was poor Edward?
Hal.
And why did you let me go on thinking that my mother... that my mother...
But she couldn't finish. She could only sink to the bed, her head in her hands, shaking with tears.
My whole life has been a lie!
Ezra said nothing. He only looked down at her, motionless, and Hal felt the cold inside her harden into certainty.
What did you do to her,
Ezra? She said the words softly, but they sounded like what they were. An accusation. His face was neutral, but he was not able to hide his eyes, and in the stark, bright moonlight, Hal saw the pupils, black against black, dilate suddenly, wildly with shock, and then contract. And she knew that she had hit the truth.
You made a mistake,
she said quietly.
earlier tonight. It niggled at me all evening, something you'd said. I couldn't pin down what it was that was bothering me. I kept thinking it was something you'd said in the car running over our conversations, but it wasn't. It was something you said at the service station.
How?
Ezra said. His throat was hoarse and he cleared it as if he were finding it hard to speak. He took his arm down from the wall, folded his arms.
Al moan down outside her house, you said.
You were talking about Maud, Ezra, not Maggie. And how did you know that? About the house?
I don't know what...
Oh, for God's sake! She stood up, facing him, her head barely to his chest. But suddenly, she was no longer afraid. She was angry.
I am so angry, she remembered him saying. I am angry all the time.
Well, this man was her father. And she could be angry too.
Stop pretending, she said. Her voice was quiet and the trembling had stopped. This was it. This was what she was good at. Reading people. Reading their body language. Reading between the lines to the truth they did not want to admit, even to themselves.
It wasn't reported in any of the papers that it was outside our house. In fact, the police deliberately kept it out of the public reports because I didn't want people doorstepping the flat.
You weren't there. You've never been to my flat. Unless you have.
What are you talking about?
He said. But the words were almost mechanical, as if he knew that she had seen through to the truth he had been hiding all this time. For Hal had seen something. Something in Ezra's eyes. Some flicker of consciousness that she had seen 100,000 times before. And it told her that she was right.
You knew, she said, full of certainty. You were there. What did you do?
For a long, long moment, he said nothing. He simply stood, his back to the door, his arms folded. His face was in shadow, the moonlight only showing Hal his brows, knitted in an angry frown. But she was not frightened of him.
She could read this man, and he was afraid. She had him cornered, not the other way round.
Ezra, you're my... The word stuck in her throat. You are my father. Don't you think I have a right to know?
Oh, Hal, he said, and he shook his head. Suddenly not angry anymore, but as if he were very sad or very tired, Hal was not sure.
Hal, why the fuck couldn't you just leave it?
Because I have to know. I have a right to know.
I'm sorry, he said softly. I am so, so sorry.
And then she knew. Chapter 48. You killed my mother. The truth hit her like a slap of icy water, knocking all the breath out of her. She felt herself falling into a deep, black certainty. It was like she had always known, and yet the shock of hearing it in her own quiet, flat voice was still absolute. She found herself gasping for breath, a kind of slow drowning. And then she could not speak any longer, only shake her head, but not in disbelief.
It was a kind of desperation for this not to be true.
But it was. And she had known it for longer than she had realized. Perhaps she had known it since she had come to this house. She just could not bear for it to be true.
Maud was going to tell you everything,
he said sadly.
She wrote and told Mother. She said you had a right to know, and that she was going to tell you when you turned 18.
And I couldn't let her. I couldn't let her tell you the truth. You killed her. And you killed Maggie. I didn't mean to. God, I loved her, Hal. Once, but she was...
He shook his head as if trying even now to understand.
It was an accident.
But she made me so, so angry.
Hal, that's what you have to understand.